Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Scott Kirshner. It was a late night on Beacon Hill as the House and Senate raced against the clock to wrap up the session before the stroke of midnight, finalizing compromise bills to send to the governor's desk. And although some big ones fizzled, like a proposed tax on Airbnb rentals or restrictions on employee non-compete agreements, one major piece of legislation headed to Governor Baker is the state's renewable energy bill. It requires the state to buy much more power from hydro and offshore wind sources than ever before. So what would this law mean for your energy bill, for the environment, and the power production industry? We have two voices in the studio on this today. Peter Shattuck is director of the Clean Energy Initiative and director of the Massachusetts Office of the Acadia Group. Peter, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me.
And also Dan Dolan, president of the trade group New England Power Generators Association. Dan, welcome to you.
Thank you.
Okay, so let's start off with each of your reactions to the bill we wound up with yesterday. Peter, what's your take?
Well, I think overall this is a real win for clean energy. It's a win for Massachusetts. First, it's going to help reduce carbon pollution significantly, which we know we need to do to address the threat of climate change, to meet legal requirements to reduce climate pollution that were just confirmed by the highest court in the state. And it also helps diversify an energy mix that has become dangerously over-reliant on natural gas. We're getting towards approaching 60% of our energy from gas, and that's putting a lot of eggs in one basket. And finally, I think it's a win because it launches some really promising industries. Offshore wind is something that has yet to be developed at scale in North America, and that can happen out of Massachusetts. And also energy storage, which has an opportunity to be the next breakthrough technology to meet our energy needs.
Okay, and I want to talk about both of those things because we've certainly been talking about building wind turbines in Massachusetts for quite some time. But Dan, what's your take on the compromise bill from yesterday?
I think despite laudable goals of reducing emissions and preserving reliability, this has the potential to be the single largest rate increase facing Massachusetts consumers that we've ever seen in this state. And that's really for two main reasons. The first is that it carves up the marketplace. These contracts equate to roughly 40% of the electricity market in Massachusetts. It says for that 40% of the market, only these subset of resources can compete.
You mean the offshore wind or hydro are the only things that can
That's exactly
buy
right.
with that 40%?
That's exactly right. And layered on top of that are existing carve-outs that are around today for a renewable portfolio standard for what we consider the more traditional renewables, wind, solar, folks like that. And so if you combine it all together, we now have 60% of the market that is being carved up by the state, meaning that the power plants located here in Massachusetts and across New England can't compete for that. And that is going to increase costs for consumers.
And Dan, just as one follow-up, can you talk about the membership of the group you represent, New England Power Generators? I mean, are there companies in there that produce solar power or wind or hydro?
Absolutely. We represent roughly 85% of the generating capacity across the six states of New England. It's a comparable number here in Massachusetts. It's every different technology and fuel source, including a number of the wind farms, the majority of the solar capacity in Massachusetts. We also have all the nuclear plants, the vast majority of the natural gas, and all the other fuels and technologies that are out there.
I'm just curious, because you guys are obviously in different positions on this energy bill. Is there any common ground here? Is there anything, Peter, that you two agree on?
Well, I think there's a general unanimous sense that we need to address climate change. And so now the question is how. And I think it's complicated because the markets we have in place that Dan was referring to have produced a lot of benefits. We have low prices. We've seen some of the dirtier assets in terms of coal and oil coming offline. But now we face a real challenge that under business as usual, the market alone is only building natural gas. And we know to achieve our deep emissions reduction goals, to get to an 80% requirement that we have to get to, we need to start being a little bit more deliberate in the sources of energy that we support.
Okay, so I'm confused. When you talk about low cost, I've been seeing lots of estimates that energy costs in New England are like 39, 40% higher than the rest of the country. And WBUR did some reporting last winter that there were these spikes where, you know, it would go up 30% or 40% over average costs. So, Dan, why don't you chime in on, you know, do you agree on the low cost thing? And we kind of, it seems like we don't know yet what this bill is going to do to my average monthly bill at home, right?
Well, we've actually run some initial numbers looking at what were these types of procurements impact for consumers. And our view at a very high level is this would increase above the market price by $777 million per year for Massachusetts consumers. You multiply that over the decades-long contracts, we're talking roughly $20 billion in increased costs for consumers.
Okay, so that sounds like a big number. Are you getting around to what do you think it's going to be for, you know, my annual electricity costs or my monthly electricity costs?
You know, we actually haven't broken it down on an individual consumer basis. But regardless, we're talking about orders of magnitude, bigger than any rate increase that we've ever seen previously. But getting back to, I think, the fundamental point here, looking at how do we initiate some of the change that I think is recognized across the board. And Peter's right. We agree. We should be committed to reducing emissions. Power plants here in Massachusetts have cut carbon emissions by 51%, more than twice any other sector of the economy. We're willing to do more. But to get to the 80% reduction by 2050 that is in state law, it's also economy-wide. And at a certain point, we need to look at the other sectors of the economy, the biggest one being transportation. That's more than twice the carbon emissions of power plants and is the only sector of the economy in which emissions are actually rising.
And that you mean, by that you mean trucking and also our own cars driving around?
All of it.
Uh-huh. Peter, you wanted to chime in there on the cost question?
Yeah, the cost first. You know, there have been analyses on all sides of this. Is it going to drive costs up? Others would say it will bring costs down because once the projects, the wind and hydro are all online, they're basically producing fuel. They're producing electricity for free. They get their fuel for free. So they could bring down the electricity prices. I think one of the analyses that I thought really brought it home was something from the Union of Concerned Scientists that looked at a bill actually larger, but a similar shape to what was just passed, and found that it would be about $3 a month. And that was for more hydro, more offshore wind, and more other renewables. So if we just say, for purposes of illustration, it's maybe $1.50, $2, you know, that's a cup of coffee a month. And as a hedge against both climate change and over-reliance on natural gas, that doesn't seem like an unreasonable price to pay. And then just on the transportation point, I think it's a good one. But one of the main tools we have to reduce emissions in the transportation sector is through electric vehicles. Now, those vehicles need to run on as clean a source of electricity as we can get. So by cleaning up the power sector even more, we get more bang from the buck from reducing emissions with electric vehicles.
Assuming in the future more of us are driving electric cars than today. Dan, I'd love to ask you about the energy storage part of the bill and kind of what your take is there. So my understanding is we're talking about large-scale battery arrays or other storage technology that would store energy at times when there's high production and relatively low cost and be able to release it or have consumers use it at moments when, you know, you have an August heat wave or a January freeze. Is that something you view as a positive development that we're going to try to encourage that sort of energy storage?
Energy storage and electricity is the holy grail. To be able to deal with the intermittency that occurs right now with a lot of renewables when the wind doesn't blow or the sun doesn't shine, or as you put it, to deal with peak periods. That is really the game changer that so many folks and the smart institutions here in town are trying to address. I think it makes a lot of sense for the state to examine and explore different pilot programs to try and get there. The bill is a first step to do that. I think that makes sense. The biggest issue, however, is beyond that type of research, development, some initial deployment, is to get back to the core of this. We're talking about carving out wide swaths of the marketplace overall and saying that we know better than the market. We're going to pick what is the resource for the next 20 years that's going to supply 40 to 60% of our electricity when the amount of technological change that occurs in this industry happens fast and unpredictably.
Right. Well, and that kind of gets us back to talking about offshore wind, right? Because Cape Wind was first proposed for Nantucket Sound in 2001. Now people say, oh, the technology has moved on. We shouldn't have built it. I mean, couldn't we sit around forever and say, let's not build wind farms or new solar arrays because the technology keeps getting better? Peter, I'd love for you to talk about the Cape Wind project. And it seems like this energy bill says, okay, we realize that Cape Wind and those nearshore wind farms, people don't love those. So let's do it further out, which is also a more expensive place to build wind farms.
Well, it is further out. It's in federal waters rather than state water. So it's basically out of sight from land. So it should deal with some of those local concerns.
Not in my backyard.
The NIMBY concerns.
Yeah.
A lot of folks would say the cost implications actually go in the other direction, that because this is a new project, they can use the new, larger, efficient wind turbines that they're now deploying in Europe out there, that the cost comes down. If you have to install fewer of these wind turbines, then the overall cost of electricity, the cost of these projects goes down. And, you know, to Dan's point about carving up the market, this is not saying we're going to do one project. This is another important distinction from Cape Wind. It's saying there will be competitive solicitations for contracts for offshore wind. So some of the biggest developers from Europe who've done this before are going to come in. They're going to have to compete with domestic companies. So there will be competition. It's really just bracketing the types of resources where we want to see competition and diversifying. I mean, I go back to 60% of the power from natural gas. That's a big risk to take, not just from a climate standpoint, but there's a history of price volatility. If that price goes up and we have all our eggs in that basket, that's a big problem.
And yet the irony is we're talking about competition, yet there would be only three companies that could compete for those offshore wind. And Cape Wind is actually specifically excluded from that competition, which is ironic given that they won their contract without any competition to begin with. But I think as if we... Again, come back to the fundamental issue here. It's about us being smarter than the marketplace and saying for the next 20 years, we're going to lock into these types of technologies. When I think the more appropriate role right now is let's set the emission standard. Let's make it aggressive. Let's set the market standards that we want from a reliability and a pricing standpoint. And then let's figure out who can do it best. What's the innovative new technology? Who's the entity that can put their capital at risk? And have competition take hold.
I'd love to see if we could get real quickly to the natural gas pipeline part of the energy bill. We have very little time left, but Peter, would you fill us in? And we've seen lots of protests around natural gas pipelines. The bill says utilities can still tack fees onto our monthly bills to pay for the construction. So are we going to continue to see both new natural gas pipelines and protests over where they're being built?
Well, actually, the legislation was silent on natural gas. And in effect, the outcome is what you described, that as it stands right now, utilities could impose this cost on electric ratepayers, on everyone who pays an electric bill. But this is being challenged at the Supreme Judicial Court. So there still are hurdles that this proposal would have to jump through. And I think that there's growing recognition about the risk of natural gas. And this clean energy bill itself should remove some of the motivation for building natural gas because we're diversifying away from natural gas. We won't need as much. The need for this pipeline diminishes.
Great. Peter Shattuck, director of the Clean Energy Initiative and director of the Massachusetts office of the Acadia Group. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And Dan Dolan, president of the New England Power Generators Association, thank you for coming in.
Thank you very much.
Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Scott Kirshner. This is Radio Boston.